Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
As Christmas closes in, let us take a trip back in time to 1947 and a collection of ghost stories by Sir Andrew Caldecott. Not exactly ghosts. I read this collection as a child, and the story that has always stayed with me is entitled Christmas Reunion. It's the last story in the collection, and as a bonus, here's the story for your entertainment this Christmas. Thank you to Project Gutenberg for allowing me to share this creepy Christmas tale with you all. I cannot explain what exactly it is about him, but I don't like your Mr. Clarence Love. I'm sorry that you ever asked him to stay. Thus Richard Drayton to his wife Eleanor on the morning of Christmas Eve. But one must remember the children, Richard. You know what marvellous presents he gives them. Much too marvellous. He spoils them. Yet you'll have noticed that none of them like him. Children have wonderful intuition in regards to the character of grown-ups. What on earth are you hinting about his character? He's a very nice man. Drayton shuffled off his slippers in front of the study fire and began putting on his boots. I wonder, darling, whether you noticed his face just now at breakfast when he opened that letter with the Australian stamps on. Yes, he did seem a bit upset. But not more so than you when you get my dressmaker's bill. Mrs. Drayton accompanied this sally with a playful pat on her husband's back as he leant forward to do up his laces. Well, Eleanor, all that I can say is that there's something very fishy about his Antipodean history. At 25, he left England a penniless young man. And hey presto, he returns a stinking plutocrat at 28. And how? What he's told you doesn't altogether tally with what he's told me. But cutting out the differences, his main story is that he duly contacted old Nelson Joy, his maternal uncle, whom he went out to join, and that they went off together, prospecting for gold. They struck it handsomely, and then the poor old uncle gets a heart stroke or paralysis or something in the bush, and bids Clarence leave him there to die, and get out himself before the food gives out. Arrived back in Sydney, Clarence produces a will under which he is the sole beneficiary, and gets the court to presume old Joy's death, and bunks back here with the loot. Mrs. Drayton frowned. I can see nothing wrong or suspicious about the story, she said, but only in your telling of it. No, no, in his telling of it. He never gets the details quite the same twice running, and I'm certain that he gave a different topography for the prospecting expedition this year from what he did last. It's my belief he did the uncle in, poor old chap. Don't be so absurd, Richard, and please remember that he's our guest, and we must be hospitable, especially at Christmas. Which reminds me, on your way to office, would you mind looking in at Harridge's and making sure that they haven't forgotten our order for their Santa Claus tomorrow? He's to be here at 7, then to go on to the Simpsons at 7:30, and to end up at the Joneses' at 8. It's lucky our getting 3 households to share the expenses. Harridge's charge each of us only half their catalogue fee. If they could possibly send us the same Father Christmas as last year, it would be splendid. The children adored him. Don't forget to say, too, that he will find all the crackers, hats, musical toys and presents inside the big chest in the hall, just the same as last year. What should we do nowadays without the big stores? One goes to them for everything. We certainly do, Drayton agreed. And I can't see the modern child putting up with the amateur Father Christmases we used to suffer from. I shall never forget the annual exhibition Uncle Bertie used to make of himself, or the slippering I got when I stuck a darning needle into his behind under the pretense that I wanted to see if he was real. Well, so long, old girl. No, I won't forget to call in at Harridge's. By the time the festive Christmas supper had reached the dessert stage, Mrs. Drayton fully shared her husband's regret that she had ever asked Clarence Love to be at the party. The sinister change that had come over him on receipt of the letter from Australia had become accentuated on the later arrival of a telegram, which, he said, would necessitate his leaving towards the end of the evening to catch the 8:15 northbound express from King's Pancras. His valet had already gone ahead with the luggage, and as it had turned so foggy, he had announced his intention of following later by underground, in order to avoid the possibility of being caught in a traffic jam. It is strange how sometimes the human mind can harbour simultaneously two entirely contradictory emotions. Mrs. Drayton was consumed with annoyance that any guest of hers should be so inconsiderate as to terminate his stay in the middle of a Christmas party, but was at the same time impatient to be rid of such a skeleton at the feast. One of the things that she had found attractive in Clarence Love had been an unfailing fund of small talk, which, if not brilliant, was at any rate bright and breezy. He possessed also a pleasant and frequent smile, and till now had always been assiduous in his attention to her conversation. Since yesterday, however, though, he had turned silent, inattentive, and dour in expression. His presentation to her of a lovely emerald brooch had been unaccompanied by any greeting beyond an unflattering and perfunctory Happy Christmas. He had also proved unforgivably oblivious of the mistletoe, beneath which, with a careful carelessness, she had stationed herself when she heard him coming down for breakfast. It was indeed quite mortifying, and when her husband described the guest as a busted balloon, she had neither the mind nor the heart to gainsay him. Happily for the mirth and merriment of the party, Drayton seemed to derive much exhilaration from the dumb discomfiture of his wife's friend, and Eleanor had never seen or heard her husband in better form. He managed too to infect the children with his own exuberance, and even Miss Potterby, the governess, reciprocated his fun. Even before the entry of Father Christmas, it had thus become a noisy and almost rowdy company. Father Christmas's salutation on arrival was in rhymed verse and delivered in the manner appropriate to pantomime. His lines ran thus: "To sons of peace, you'll bring release from worry at this tide, but men of crime, this holy time, their guilty heads need hide. So never fear, ye children dear, but innocent sing Noel, for the holy rood shall save the good, and the bad be burned in hell. This is my carol, and Noel my parole." There was a clapping of hands at this, for is nothing children enjoy so much as mummery, especially if it be slightly mysterious. The only person who seemed to dislike the recitation was Love, who was seen to stop both ears with his fingers at the end of the first verse and to look ill. As soon as he had made an end of the prologue, Santa Claus went ahead with his distribution of gifts and made many a merry quip and pun. He was quick on the uptake too, for the children put to him many a poser, to which a witty reply was always ready. The minutes indeed slipped by all too quickly for all of them, except Love, who kept glancing uncomfortably at his wristwatch and was plainly in a hurry to go. Hearing him mutter that it was time for him to be off, Father Christmas walked to his side and bade him pull a farewell cracker. Having done so, resentfully it seemed, he was asked to pull out the motto and read it. His hands were now visibly shaking, and his voice seemed to have caught their infection. Very falteringly, he managed to stammer out the two lines of doggerel: "Reunited heart to heart, love and joy shall never part." "And now," said Father Christmas, "I must be making for the next chimney, and, on my way, sir, I will see you into the underground." So saying, he took Clarence Love by the left arm and led him with mock ceremony to the door, where he turned and delivered his epilogue: "Ladies and gentlemen, good night. Let not darkness you affright. Aught of evil here today. Santa Claus now bears away." At this point, with sudden dramatic effect, he clicked off the electric light switch by the door, and by the time Drayton had groped his way to it in the darkness and turned it on again, the parlourmaid, who was awaiting the Love's departure in the hall, had let both him and Father Christmas out onto the street. Excellent, Mrs. Drayton exclaimed. Quite excellent. One can always depend on Harridges. It wasn't the same man they sent last year, but quite as good and more original, perhaps. I'm glad he's taken Mr. Love away, said young Harold. Yes, Dorothy chipped in. He's been beastly all day, and yesterday too, and his presents aren't nearly as expensive as last year's. Shut up, you spoilt children, the father interrupted. I must admit, though, that the fellow was a wet blanket this evening. What was that nonsense he read out about reunion? Miss Potterby, the governess, had developed a pedagogic habit of clearing her throat audibly, as a signal demanding her pupils' attention to some impending announcement. She did it now, and parents as well as children looked expectantly towards her. The motto as read by Mr. Love, she declared, was so palpably inconsequent that I took the liberty of appropriating it when he laid the slip of paper back on the table. Here it is, and this is how it actually reads. Be united heart to heart. Love and joy shall never part. That makes sense if it doesn't make poetry. Mr. Love committed the error of reading be united as reunited and of not observing the comma between the two lines. Thank you, Miss Potterby. That, of course, explains it. How clever of you to have spotted the mistake and tracked it down. Thus encouraged, Miss Potterby proceeded to further corrective edification. You remarked it just now, Mrs. Drayton, that the gentleman impersonating Father Christmas had displayed originality. His prologue and epilogue, however, were neither of them original, but corrupted versions of passages, which you will find in Professor Borley's Synopsis of Nativity, Miracle and Morality Plays, published 2 years ago. I happen to be familiar with the subject, as the author is a first cousin of mine, once removed. How interesting, Drayton here broke in. And now, Miss Potterby, if you will be most kindly preside at the piano, we will dance Sir Roger de Coverley. Come on, children, into the drawing room. On Boxing Day, there was no post and no paper. Meeting Mrs. Simpson in the park that afternoon, Mrs. Drayton was surprised to hear that Father Christmas had kept neither of his two other engagements. It must have been that horrid fog, she suggested. But what a shame! He was even better than last year, by which intelligence Mrs. Simpson seemed little comforted. Next morning, the second after Christmas, there were two letters on the Drayton's breakfast table, and both were from Harridges. The first conveyed that firm's deep regret that their representative should have been prevented from carrying out his engagements in Pentland Square in Christmas night, owing to dislocation of traffic caused by the prevailing fog. But he kept ours all right, Mrs. Drayton commented. I felt so sorry for the Simpsons and the Joneses. The second letter cancelled the first, which had been written in unfortunate oversight of the cancellation of the order. What on earth does that mean? Mrs. Drayton ejaculated. Ask me another, returned her husband. Got their correspondence mixed up, I suppose. In contrast to the paucity of letters, the morning newspapers seemed unusually large and full of pictures. Mrs. Drayton's choice of what to read in them was not that of a highbrow. The headline that attracted her first attention ran, Christmas on Underground. And, among other choice items, she learned how, at Pentland Street Station, their own nearest, a man dressed as Santa Claus had been seen to guide and support an invalid.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Or possibly tipsy companion down the long escalator. The red coat, mask and beard were afterwards found discarded in a passage leading to the emergency staircase. So even that Santa's sobriety might even be called into question. She was just about to retell this interesting intelligence to her husband when, laying down his own paper, he stared curiously at her and muttered, Good God! What's the matter, dear? A very horrible thing, Eleanor. Clarence Love has been killed. Listen! Here he resumed his paper and began to read aloud. The body of the man who fell from the Pentland Street platform on Christmas night, in front of the incoming train, has been identified as that of Mr. Clarence Love, of No. 11 Playfair Mansions. There was a large crowd of passengers on the platform at the time, and it is conjectured that he fell backwards off it whilst turning to expostulate with persons exerting pressure at his back. Nobody, however, in the crush, would have seen the exact circumstances of this said fatality. Hush, dear, here come the children. They mustn't know, of course. We can talk about it afterwards. Drayton, however, could not wait to talk about it afterwards. The whole of the amateur detective within him had been aroused, and, rising early from the breakfast table, he journeyed by tube to Harridge's, where he was soon interviewing a department sub-manager. No, there was no possibility of one of their representatives having visited Pentland Square on Christmas evening. Our Mr. Droper had got hung up in the Shenton Street traffic block until it was too late to keep his engagements there. He had come straight back to his rooms. In any case, he would not have called at Mr. Drayton's residence in view of the cancellation of the order the previous day. Not cancelled? But he took down the telephone message himself. Yes, here was the entry in the register. Then it must have been the work of some mischief maker. It was certainly a gentleman's and not a lady's voice. Nobody except he and Mr. Droper knew of the engagement at their end, so the practical joker must have derived his knowledge of it from somebody in Mr. Drayton's household. This was obviously sound reasoning, and on his return home, Drayton questioned Mrs. Timmins, the cook, in the matter. She was immediately helpful and forthcoming. One of the insurance gents had called on the morning before Christmas, and had been told that none of them wanted no policies or such like. He had then turned conversational, and asked what sort of goings-on there would be here for Christmas. Nothing, he was told, except old Father Christmas as usual, straight from Harridge's shop. Then he asked about visitors in the house, and told there were none except Mr. Love, who, judging by the tip at what he had given Martha when he had last stayed in the house, was a wealthy and open-handed gentleman. Little did she think when she spoke those words, as Mr. Love would forget to give any tips or boxes at Christmas, when they were most natural and proper. But perhaps he would think better on it by New Year, and send a postal order. Drayton thought it unlikely, but deemed it unnecessary at this juncture to inform Mrs. Timmins of the tragedy that had been reported in the newspaper. At luncheon, Mrs. Drayton found her husband unusually thoughtful and preoccupied. But by the time they had come to the cheese, he had announced importantly that he had made up his mind to report immediately to the police certain information that had come into his possession. Miss Potterby and the children looked suitably impressed, but knew better than to court a snub by asking questions. Mrs. Drayton took the cue admirably by replying, "Of course, Richard, you must do your duty." The inspector listened intently and jotted down occasional notes. At the end of the narration, he complimented the informant by asking whether he had formed any theory regarding the facts he had reported. Drayton most certainly had. That's why he had been so silent and absent-minded at lunch. His solution, put much more briefly than he expounded it to the inspector, was as follows. Clarence Love had abandoned his uncle and partner in the Australian bush. Having returned to civilization, he got the courts to presume his uncle's death, and taken probate of the will under which he was the sole inheritor. Love returned to England a wealthy and still youngish man. The uncle, however, this was Drayton's theory, did not die after his nephew's desertion, but was found and tended to by bushmen. Having regained his power of locomotion, he trekked back to Sydney, where he discovered himself legally dead, and his property appropriated by Love and taken to England. Believing his nephew to have compassed his death, he resolved to take revenge into his own hands. Having dispatched a cryptic letter to Love containing dark hints of impending doom, he sailed for the old country and ultimately tracked Love down to the Drayton's abode. Then, having in the guise of a travelling insurance agent, ascertained the family's programme for Christmas Day, planning his impersonation of Santa Claus. That his true identity, revealed by voice and accent, did not escape his victim was evidenced by the latter's nervous misreading of the motto in the cracker. Whether Love's death in the underground was due to actual murder, or to suicide enforced by despair and remorse, Drayton hazarded no guess. Either was possible under his theory. The inspector's reception of Drayton's hypotheses was less enthusiastic than his wife's. "If you'll excuse me, Mr. Drayton," said the former, "you've built a mighty lot on damn little. Still, it's ingenious and no mistake. I'll follow your ideas up, and if you call in a week's time, I may have something to tell you, and one or two things, perhaps, to ask." "Why, darling, how wonderful," Mrs. Drayton applauded. Now that you've pieced the bits together so cleverly, the thing's quite obvious, isn't it? What a horrible thing to have left poor old Mr. Joy to die all alone in the jungle. I never really liked Clarence, and I'm quite glad now that he's dead. But of course we mustn't tell the children. Inquiries of the Australian police, however, elicited the intelligence that the presumption of Mr. Joy's death had long since been confirmed by the discovery of his remains in an old prospecting pit. There were ugly rumours and suspicions against his nephew, but no evidence on which to support them. On being thus informed by the inspector, Drayton amended his theory to the extent that the impersonator of Father Christmas must not have been Mr. Joy himself, as he was dead, but a bosom friend determined to avenge him. This substitution deprived the cracker episode, on which Drayton had imagined his whole story, of all relevance, and the inspector was quite frank about his disinterest in the revised version. Mrs. Drayton also rejected it. Her husband's original theory seemed to her more obviously right and conclusive than ever before. The only amendment required, and on that a mere matter of detail, was to substitute Mr. Joy's ghost for Mr. Joy. Though, of course, one mustn't tell the children. But, her husband remonstrated, you know that I do not believe in ghosts. No, but your Aunt Cecilia does, and she is such a clever woman. By the way, she called in this morning and left you a book to look at. A book? Yes, the collected ghost stories of M.R. James. But the stupid old dear knows that I have them all in the original editions. So she said. But she wants you to read the author's epilogue to the collection, which, she says, is most entertaining. It's entitled, Stories I Have Tried to Write. She said that she'd sidelined a passage that might interest you. The book's on that table by you. No, not that. The one with the black cover. Drayton picked it up, found the marked passage, and read it aloud. There may be possibilities too in the Christmas cracker, if the right people pull it, and if the motto which they find inside has the right message on it. They will probably leave the party early, making excuses, but very likely a previous engagement of long standing would be a more truthful excuse. There is certainly, Drayton commented, some resemblance between James's idea and our recent experience. But he could have made a perfectly good yarn out of that theme without introducing ghosts. His wife's mood at that moment was for compromise rather than controversy. Well, darling, she temporised. Perhaps not exactly ghosts. Merry Christmas, one and all, and thank you for your support this year. Have a great holiday.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right Rug.